production includes discussions about topics such as sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, emotional violence, and physical violence. This content may be difficult, so should you continue to listen, I encourage you to care for your safety and well-being.
Hi guys, I'm Leslie Jingleski, and I am excited to be here with Carolyn Markle Hammond. We are recording our podcast in the series for Responding with Hope, and this series is going to be called Why She Didn't Just Leave. And I think that's a question that a lot of us ask, and hopefully this is going to be the first in our series of topics and brave survivors who are willing to come on here and talk to us. And Carolyn, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Leslie, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm so glad that we're connected.
Absolutely. I'm glad that we connected too. We kind of spoke earlier. Social media is my nemesis sometimes, but it really does put people together. It brings people together when they need to be together.
You're right. And I think, you know, I always like to acknowledge the moments when tiny little sparks from the universe, right? Because the whole way you found me was by looking under the hashtag domestic violence. So if anyone is listening to this or when they get to see it, it's really important, if you can't think of anything and you can think of a hashtag, put that in your search and you'll pop up all kinds of things. And that, I think, is truly the power of social media and the power of what it means when you decide to start connecting and you don't have quite the answers or what you want to do. The first thing you pop in your head can also be a hashtag and lead you to the resources and the people that you need to find the assistance that you deserve.
I agree 100%. Let's talk about your story. We're going to dive right in. I don't want to wait. I don't want to keep the suspense going. Because your story is happy and it's sad and it's happy and it's inspiring. So I want you to take me back to the beginning and how you met. And I want to hear the whole part of it.
You know what, when you and I talked about this, I really love the way you're doing this, because abuse doesn't start out as abuse. It starts out as love. Right. It starts out as really great sex. It starts out as poetry and dinners out and dancing and promises. And it slowly morphs over time so that people are always trying to get back to those first few glorious, maybe weeks, maybe months, maybe years, based on anyone's particular story, until the creeping in of insanity starts. So my story is, you know, you'd have to go back to my years of college, and you'd have to go back to that time frame, because that's when I first met the person that I ultimately became involved with. It was back during college. And then flash forward, you know, 20 plus years, and post during my separation, my former husband and I are were very friendly, and the dissolution of our marriage took a very long time, and we both lived separate lives while we got that divorce hammered out. And so it was during my part of that, all with the upfront information with my now former husband, and post this person's divorce. And we reconnected again on Facebook. Wow. And, you know, here I was thinking how magical that was. And how beautiful that was. It was. Mm-hmm. It was. It's interesting, you know, because I'm trying to, in preparation for this, I was thinking about how do you talk about what was when you can now layer on what you didn't know. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know.
I didn't know what I didn't know, right? So I entered in this, and that's what I decided to be. I'm going to talk from a couple of things that I think are important to talk about. I'm going to talk from the female pronoun because it's my story. I also know that it means that there are men who are abused. There are people who are gender fluid who are abused. There are people who are in the queer community who identify in whatever form of their relationship who also issue abuse. So if you hear me use the female pronoun, it's because this is my story. Right. The other part of me choosing to tell the story is to talk about where I was authentically participating, because that allows me to start to separate what I knew and what I didn't know. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely.
Okay. So in my thinking about today, That's the road we're going to travel.
Great.
So when I start this relationship and I am authentically investing in another person, what I didn't know then is what I know now to be red flags. So if you wanted to even think about what starts at the very beginning of what I now know as a red flag, I could give you a really good example. So we had connected. We had been going back and forth, text messaging, FaceTiming, video calls, and we had met a couple of times and we decided to go to Vegas, right? So this is probably about between the first meeting and this first Vegas trip, I'd like to say, if memory serves, 10 to 12 weeks. Okay. And again, knowing that we had met way, way long before. So there was a history. Mm-hmm. And we went to Vegas and I was coming out of the down to meet him. And we were getting ready to go out for a concert. And he said to me, "You look like a slut." And I said, I'm sorry, what? And he said, "Yeah, you look like a slut." And I said, "Actually, I think I look really cute. And what you just said was really hurtful." And he said, "Now that seems really benign." And me saying that and labeling that as abuse, some people, I don't want to lose people in the story and them going, "Yeah, really, you thought that was abusive?" Hey, if somebody says something that hurts your feelings and you say that hurts my feelings, his response was, "Oh my God, you can't take a joke? Really, seriously, you're going to," and this is what he said, "you're going to ruin our evening because you can't take a joke?" Now keep in mind, I didn't get nasty. I didn't get like confrontational. I just said, "I think I look good. And what you just said hurt my feelings," just like that. Right. But it quickly turned into, "You can't take a joke and you're going to ruin this evening. And why are you acting like this?" And I said, "Whoa, I just said you hurt my feelings, right? Oh yeah. Yeah. But you can't take this, you know, my teasing." I'm like, "Okay, let's move forward." Right. Because then I'm thinking what I think was, okay, maybe he meant it as a joke and I just didn't like it. And okay, I'm still getting to know this person, but all right, I'll give him some leeway. And then he did something which was interesting. He said, "You know what? We're going to be doing a lot of walking. Let's go buy you a pair of boots. Let's go shopping. Let's get you a great pair of boots. My treat. We're walking on Vegas," right? That all seems benign. And maybe in a relationship, if that has, when it would have stopped, it would have been benign. But that is the pattern of abuse. And that's how it tiny, tiny, tiny starts dismantling another person from the inside out by saying, "How dare you? How dare you think that you can't take a joke?" And then apologizing with a love bomb. "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. You know what? Okay, let's just go on and have an evening. I'm going to buy you a brand new pair of boots." That type of cycle is how abuse starts, because eventually that becomes the pattern. It might be, "You don't fold the towels right. I don't like the way you drive a car. I don't like the way that you talk to people. I don't like that you can make friends whenever you walk into a room. I don't like that people look at you when you walk into a room." And here I'm, you know, the person standing in my shoes, authentically investing in another person, and authentically investing in, so for me, authentically investing in someone. And when you are doing that, and this person is also claiming to love you, also claiming to want to build a life with you, also claiming to say, "Hey, you know, you're amazing and you're the only one," this is a big one, "You're the only one who can fix me. You're the only one who can love me like you do."
Yeah.
You start to take those little digs at you. And then the resulting, "You can't just take a joke. You're too sensitive. Why do you feel the need to talk to everybody? You were hitting on him when all I was doing was having a conversation with someone. He was hitting on you when all I was doing was walking to get a drink." The person standing in my shoes or anybody else's shoes, authentically investing in another person, slowly being dismantled from the inside out, you start to believe that. You start to believe, "Well, surely this is my fault." And you ignore what's happening to you. You ignore the feelings that you're having in the relationship that make you sad, worried, fearful, wondering if he's lying, in pain, or just overall unsafe. And so you ignore those feelings and you just keep trying to fix it. And that's the cycle.
That we talk about that gut when it's realistic, right? Women, men, children have a gut feeling and we discount that all the time. We
exactly.
don't, and we shouldn't. We should, and it's social, right? Mm-hmm. Because people want to talk to us and sometimes we talk about these gut feelings, trying to feel out, send feelers out and get validation. And a lot of times we don't get it.
Right.
So we shut those feelings down.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Leslie, if you could take, you know, a marching band and fireworks, this would be the opportunity to do it. Because if you think about this logically, if anyone is in a relationship and what the other person does at the same time of claiming love also does things that hurt your feelings, you have a right to those feelings.
Right.
You don't need to justify them. You don't need to explain them away. You don't need to defend them. This is what may, it might not ever have hurt anybody else to have been called a slut. That's their choice. It hurt me. So I never have to identify my feelings or justify them anymore because I know that if those are my feelings, I own them. And if I know if the person who claims to love me also makes me feel sad, worried, in pain, scared, those aren't feelings in a normal relationship, number one. Number two, I don't have to fix it. And number three, I don't have to label it. And the fourth thing is, I can walk away. And when you walk away, because your feelings in a relationship, your gut, even if you can't explain it, is giving you little signals, then the cycle you'll endure for years won't happen.
Right.
Then the complete dismantling of you won't happen. Then when he throws you against a table and spit in your face, you won't justify that he did it. When he puts his hands, and this is the story of abuse that many people face, when he puts his hands physically on you, you're not going to justify it that he just had a bad day.
Right.
Because you start to justify the behaviors against you because you're not listening to your feelings. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, you can walk away from that much sooner when you listen to your feelings.
Right.
And the beauty is when you do, and when you keep listening to your feelings, when you keep listening to your gut, the most beautiful people come into your life.
Right.
Because you're listening and honoring you. Again, if somebody else wants to honor and have everything different happen to them, let that person back out into the world to find their people. You allow the people who fuel you with good feelings and energy to come into your world and stay. And you don't have to, not that you don't have to work at friendships, but you don't have to fix people then.
Right.
And you don't have to justify their egregious behavior against you. And you don't have to say, I know I cry in my driveway before I enter my house every time, but you know, if I just work harder, maybe it'll be better this time.
Right.
No one should have to live like that. So that's the biggest fireworks and marching band thing I can say is listening to those feelings, even in the beginning of someone who claims to love you.
Right.
If those are still there, that person is only holding a place that's keeping the better person out of your life.
Sure.
And the beauty of letting go is you get to find the better person. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense. It's a hard concept.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
Yep.
And it's okay that it's hard.
I agree.
It's okay that we have these feelings, and it's okay that we're withdrawn because that's society.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid to talk about things because we're afraid of other people's responses.
Right. Right.
So I'm curious with your story, how long did you push these feelings down?
Oh, great question. And I want to I want to say something that I think is what, when I talk to survivors, I hear over and over and over again. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I was, you know, allowed to have my feelings and not have to justify them to somebody. Right. I didn't know that the things that were happening to me were actually forms of abuse until somebody handed me the wheel of power and control. I thought, this has been my life. And that's a very long preface to
It is a preface, but it is also, we have survivors come to our shelter, and the famous thing that a lot of them will say is, you know, it just got violent, he just hit me. But when you show them that power and control wheel, and you go back and you look, you'll see that the abuse started years before that. And the aha moment that comes on, and the quiet that you get after that control wheel is presented is scary.
Devastating.
It's telling. So that's why we talk about prevention, right?
Right.
We talk about getting that out before. And prevention's hard, it's tough, and we'll get in that.
Right.
I don't want to take away from your story, but I love the power and control. I love and hate it. But
I know. But it's beautiful. And not many people know. I mean, when you're dealing within the domestic violence arena, it's because you're in your after. Or you're one of the fabulous souls who's helping change the world, so you know about it. Anybody else who's living it doesn't know that such a thing exists.
And they're the ones that need to know it.
And that they need it, right? So those moments, I'll give you a couple examples that stood out to me. Those moments of, oh, love, you travel for work, I travel for work. Don't go out with your friends. Stay home with me. I don't want you going out with anybody else. And that seems lovely, doesn't it? Until it morphs into, and your family doesn't like me, so let's not go over there. You know, I don't know that they like me. When my family had never said it. I mean, I found out afterwards they didn't, but at the time, my family had never said anything about it. But that was a way for him to eliminate me from my family, to eliminate me from my friends, to, love, don't take that job. That job, gosh, you know, you don't need to rely on a job. You have me. I have everything, right? He didn't want me to take the job because I would have made more money than he did. He didn't want me to take the job because it would have possibly given me an out to leave him. Mm-hmm. That's financial abuse. That is, isolation is one of the first forms of abuse that starts. That sounds an awful lot like love. But when you start avoiding people,
I know,
and you start avoiding family, and it becomes just the two of you, that's not.
You and me against the world.
Yes. Right. And all layered in with, you know, no one's ever loved me like you did. No one's ever got me like you do. My family is not, I didn't have a good childhood. My parents don't come see my kids, and you're the only one who shows up for their events, and you're the one who loves me, and you're the one who, layer that in, and it sounds like,
right,
love, and it's not, because what is also happening is the degradation, the put downs, the screaming, the yelling, the shoving. Mm-hmm. What then could morph into more and more physical. And what I talk about is the sexual coercion piece of this, which is, if you are investing authentically in someone and you are making decisions as regards your sexuality with that person. So you believe you're in a heterosexual monogamous relationship. You're not using condoms because this facade has been created of your perfect love. And meanwhile, that person is going out and having affair after affair after affair with both men and women. When you travel in your own home, in your own bed, which is my story, or when he travels and is in his travel hotel room, that is physical abuse. When you make sexual choices and you participate in those choices with another person under a false pretense, and the risk to your own future sexuality is compromised by numerous affairs with men and women, that is not only sexual abuse, but it is physical abuse as well.
Right.
And that's all in the power and control wheel. Yeah. And so I've had these moments with talking with other survivors that they're like, oh, so all those years of affairs, it all counts. realize that if it is painful and your recovery is hard and it feels hard, it's because it is. And this knowledge, while beautiful, also is devastating because it can be both. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you, when you do the hard work, the after is amazing. But you can't beat yourself up for what you didn't know, because you've already been dismantled and beat up by a person who claimed to love you. And if you should be your own soulmate and your own greatest love, then beating yourself up over what you did not know is the hardest thing, mm-hmm. I think, to heal from. But man, when you do, it's beautiful on the other side. It's not easy. Takes years, the lifelong thing. But man, you're above ground. And now, because you've removed the people that are causing those feelings from your life, and the best people are taking their place, it starts happening, the healing, faster and faster and faster, because you're doing it more and more.
Right. It's contagious.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's contagious. So, you know, I would not have left. I was 4 weeks away from marrying him. I would not have left because I didn't identify myself as being abused. Everything I just told you about was my after. At the time, I did not identify as being abused. At the time we were planning our wedding, it was all bought. It was all paid for. I had my dress. I had the ring. I had everything. And then I discovered his secret life.
This production includes discussions about topics such as sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, emotional violence, and physical violence. This content may be difficult, so should you continue to listen, I encourage you to care for your safety and well-being.
And the secret life I discovered is what made me leave. Because up until then, I never would have identified as such, but it's interesting. And Facebook, again, Facebook is something that can be beautiful and can be devastating, because right. those memories pop up. And you can see over the entirety of our relationship when I got off Facebook, and I would get off for months at a time, because it was so bad during those times that I felt like a fake, and I felt inauthentic, and I felt like my life is a shambles. I'm not on Facebook. I can map out. And I was like, oh yeah, that's when that happened. Oh yeah, that's when that happened. And when I would get back on would be when there was a big love bomb, and oh, sweet pea, I love you so much, and I'm so sorry I did these things, and I promise I'll change, and let's go to counseling, and let's go on a trip, and I'm going to make life better for you, and I'm sorry, I will never do it again, because I don't deserve you, and I'm going to do everything to make it up on you. And he would, for a period of time, and I'd hop on Facebook, because everything was great, and this was authentic, and we were dealing with it, only to have the cycle start again.
So let's talk about that cycle. I want to dig a little deeper into there. Do you think when what you call love bombs, which I love, when you call those love bombs, do you think he in his mind was sincere?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, people who abusers, and especially narcissistic abusers,
right,
really firmly believe they are a step above everybody else.
Right.
That their level of intelligence is better, that their understanding of people is more profound, that they can accomplish a task that most people could never do.
Sure.
And the reality is that they're all operating from the same playbook. They're completely mediocre. What they're attracted to in survivors are the intelligent, empathetic fixers who believe they can accomplish anything, because they know that person will stick around through all of their crap.
Do you think it's subconscious, or do you?
I think in those types of abuse, the cluster B personality type of abusers, mm-hmm. they would have to actually acknowledge that they have a problem in order to be fixed, and they don't see a problem with any of their behavior.
Right.
So there's never going to be, and that's something important. There's never going to be a profound moment of true, I am sorry. And that's why people go back, right? Let's get back to the topic at hand of why didn't you leave and why did you stay? That's why people stay. That's why people go back once they leave, because they're another bigger love bomb is served up. Another bigger apology is offered. Behavior is changed drastically for a tiny amount of time before it goes back to worse than it was ever before. And there's no realization in that type of abuser's behavior that will ever evoke change, and it will never give you closure. So the best closure that you can have in that situation is the sound of your own shoes walking away.
Right.
And not expect anything else. Then my expectation is I'm going to live a fabulous, incredible life.
Right.
That's your closure. And it doesn't come from anybody else, but your heart and your soul and your voice. And the beauty of that is you get to do it. It's not relative to someone else fueling you. You get to do it yourself.
Right. And then that piece has to be you.
Yes.
It can't be, well, I'm going to leave because all my friends think I need to leave. Or when I talk to people, they think I need to go. If it's not your time. And mm-hmm. And you know this, the only yes. expert in a survivor's life is that survivor.
Yes.
Everybody's yes. timeline's different. Everybody's story is different. And so what we talk about at Avalon is we can meet you where you are.
Yes, right? That's what we do at
Sometimes
Safe and Harmless
that
Life.
Involves, exactly. Sometimes that involves mm-hmm. safety planning. And you
yes.
know what? I'm not ready to go yet. I'm not ready to take my children to a communal shelter.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to swallow.
It
and
is.
And even the comforts of somebody who's abusive this amount of the time.
Right.
And we're in the middle of a love bomb.
Right.
So you want me to leave this comfort and go to a shelter because maybe I don't have the resources. Maybe I have been isolated from my family, from my friends. I don't have anywhere else to go. So maybe I'm in a situation where I think it's okay to also say, you know, yes, you need to leave, but you need to do what's right for you, right? So moving forward and having that validation that it's okay if you're stuck in that situation to question whether or not now's the time. That doesn't
exactly.
mean you can't ever do it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I just had a conversation with someone and I said, let me ask you a question. And I said, I'm going through training. I can't decide, do I want to go back to law school so I can change the court system? Or
yeah.
do I want to go back and get my advanced therapy degree
yeah.
so I can help? I mean, which do I want to do? Maybe both. I plan to live a really long life. So, 53 years is what I'm hoping more for. So I can do a lot of things between now and 103. So
sure.
I said, let me ask you this question. Would you leave him right now? And she said, no. And I said, that's okay.
Right.
And she said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm not going to tell you, you have to leave now. But what I will ask is that I'm going to arm you. And I have discovered if I gave everybody the big platinum platter of here's how you do it, survivors can't comprehend that. I'm going to give you two things. If you're going to hang out, just let's have a safety plan. Let's put some things in place.
Right.
Because remember that time when he sent you to the hospital and you didn't know what your phone number for your best friend was because she speed dialed 10? Let's get those numbers written down.
Right.
Let's talk about what you need to do. Let's get a copy of your keys for the truck. Get a copy of your keys for the car.
Insurance plans.
Yeah. Let's do these things. Let's have this list. We got a list going. Let's do these things whenever you want. Check in with me when you'd like. Because Safe and Harm's Way is not a 24/7 brick and mortar, because we don't do what Avalon does as far as the 24/7. We leave that to the smarter people than us who do that kind of work day in, day out.
Yeah.
But we can say, here are the people you connect with next. And here's what people say you should have in your back pocket. And then you get to decide when you leave. And the exhale that people have on that you've removed that burden, allows them to then take the steps that they need to do to someday leave.
Right.
And we also know that we could give all this and someone might never leave. So for that end, then we have, you know, how do you build your confidence? How do you fuel your body? How do you feel your soul? How do you build your confidence up that gives you a better way to navigate what you're doing? So that if you have to stay longer, you have some additional tools
mm-hmm.
To pull from in order to make that happen. And the counsel we give to family is double down on the love. And I know it's hard when people go back, and I know your heart breaks when people make choices that you know will hurt them. But if you stop loving them,
Right.
And you stop contacting them and you stop telling them how incredible they are, then the abuser wins. Then the only voice in that person's head is the abuser's. And I know that's hard. I know that's hard. And it's, I get goosebumps. Yes.
It is. It's part of understanding the process.
Yes.
And it's part of, I feel, understanding we can't take a survivor who's being abused. And when I say abused, somebody else holds the power in that relationship. Mm-hmm. We can't bring them to another situation. And while we feel that that's the power that they need, we can't give that to them. That has to come within themselves. We can offer them the resources and the tools, and then you know what? We're going to be here when you're ready. And if it's 7 times, we'll be here 8.
Exactly. Exactly. I do this on the nights and weekends and evenings for Safe in Harm's Way. And I have a fabulous team of 15 people who help me do it. But I have a regular full-time paying job that I also have to do. And part of that is I do a lot of education in emergency rooms and ICUs. And I get a lot of physicians who know what I do in my nonprofit work. Yeah. And they ask me sometimes after I finish doing my paying job, if I'll come back on my own time on another day to talk about the fatigue. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people in emergency departments see the same souls time after time after time. And to sit down with those people and tell my story, because they know me as the person dressed in a suit who comes in and teaches them about, you know, certain medications. And mm-hmm. I come back and I walk in as myself, as a survivor. And first of all, I get, you? I'm like, yeah, me. Mm-hmm. Guess what? There's a lot more people like me. And this
stigma. We need to get rid of that stigma.
Zero. Right. And yeah. And there are things about people you would never know. That's one of our main hashtags, because you never know right. who shows up every day with the bruises, either emotionally or verbally or physically, from home to right. work, to church, to life. So, and talk to them and say, I know this might be the 8th time that you've seen this person come in and claim she just fell down the steps. You could be also, if you invest properly with resources and kindness and love, the one time he or she decides to act on it.
Right.
So again, zero judgment from you. You're not living that life. And oh, by the way, people are 75% more likely to be killed in the first 3 months when they try to leave.
Right.
So
tell me more. Tell me more about, you know, you are here and you're doing well, but it always wasn't like that.
Right? Oh gosh, no. So when I discovered his secret life, and it's I think an interesting part of the story, because this is another thing abusers do. They give a piece of information, like a little scratch, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the tip of an iceberg, and tell you something.
Right.
And then throw out, well, and if you don't believe me, you know, check this out.
Right.
And then you don't, because this person you love and you've just been told it's just you. And also they gave you somebody to check the story with, and certainly they wouldn't have done that if the actual, you know, story could be checked out. Mm-hmm. So I give that preface because what happened to me is we were climbing into bed one evening, and he said to me, love, I think I've done something that you're going to be mad at me about. I said, oh, okay. Let's talk about that. What would you do? And he said, well, you know, for about 6 weeks now, I've been corresponding with another couple that I met on Craigslist, These were strangers that he, as far as I know, he hadn't met with. He didn't even know if they were who they said they were. You know, he was corresponding with someone, this couple, and he was offering me, without my knowledge and without my consent, up to have sex with these people. And I said, I am livid. Who do you think you are? Like, this is not something I would ever participate in. This is not something that I want to do with somebody else. How dare you? He's like, what did he say? I knew you'd be mad. This is just you being mad. Oh yeah, this is me being mad. This is me being livid.
Right.
And then when I tell this part, I believe in the universe. I'm 16 years of Catholic or 12 years of Catholic education. Somebody whispered in my ear, "Shh, be quiet. Just get in bed. Just be quiet." And I calmed down and I got in bed. I mean, it was enough that I looked over my shoulder.
Wow. To,
like, who just said that? Because, you know, this is late at night. And he said, "You know what? I'm going to leave my computer open. Check it all out." He grabbed it. He's like, "I'm going to tell him right now. It's all off. You don't want to do this." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't want to do it. Tell him right now." Right? I'm telling him right now. Acting like he's typing. Sits at his computer back on the dresser. He says, "Check it out. Check it out whenever you want. You can see what I just did." Okay. Okay. So climbed back in bed. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I got up. And for the first time in almost 8 years, I checked out the story that he gave me. The whole, check it out. If you think I'm lying, call the CEO of my company. He'll tell you where I was at. If you think I'm lying, call this person. They'll tell you what I was doing. And I never did. He left open his computer. And the first thing I found on his computer was so horrific. And it was a group on Craigslist. Now, this is, you know, like, I didn't even know this was what you, Craigslist to me is like, this is where you go buy a dryer. This is where you go buy a used car. Yeah. This is, you know, was a group that he belonged to that taught men how to drug and incapacitate their girlfriends or their wives and have other people over and watch them be raped. And it was so, I thought, oh, this must have been like horrific spam. Like someone hacked into his computer. And I closed the computer and I started to go back to bed. And I get, when I talk about this part, it's, I am so full of gratitude for whatever was surrounding me that night, because I went back to his computer and I opened it up and I found that for the entirety of our relationship, he had been putting my picture, what I did for a living and where I would be when I traveled, out on the internet, on Craigslist. All of the email exchanges started off with, "My girlfriend has no idea that I'm doing this," included words like, "I will help facilitate what could be done to her." Arranging for multiple people to be at the same place to check me out. So he would say to me, "Oh my gosh, you've been traveling so much. Get dressed up, love. Look beautiful tonight. We're going out to dinner. I'm taking you to our favorite steak place." And meanwhile, he would have invited 3 or 4 other people to that same restaurant to be stationed around the restaurant to come check me out. Again, "My girlfriend has no idea I'm doing this, and I can help facilitate what could be done to her." Now, I was 100% in the dark. This is 100% without my consent.
Oh.
Meanwhile, as I'm traveling, because I travel for a living, I would be getting people hitting on me at bars. And I could get hit on. I'm not interested in that. And people, you can go on and have a great time and everybody's fine. You know, there's not weird people in general accept that. These were people who would not take no for an answer. These were people that on a couple occasions I had to get security to get rid of. I was yelling at hotel front desk staff for, "How dare you tell somebody what my room number was? Who's the stranger you sent to my room? How dare you put a call through to me? Tell them what room number I was in that they could ask for me? You gave them my name? How did they know who I was?" I'm screaming at hotel staff, not knowing that the man who claimed to love me was putting this all out on the internet. For the entirety of our relationship, second to that, for the entirety of our relationship, when I traveled for work or when he traveled, or when we were home and he would say, "I have to go run an errand," he was having affairs with both men and women. Again, without my knowledge, without my consent. So I discovered this world that he had created on his laptop. And he has a Mac. I don't know how to work a Mac. I'm a Windows gal.
Right.
And I didn't know how to send it to the, I was afraid if I hit the wrong button and sent it to the printer that he could somehow, I wouldn't know that he could see it. So what I could at least figure out is how to remark his emails as if they were read.
Okay.
So it didn't look like I had read them.
Right.
Now, in between this, I'm devastated and I start to vomit. So I'm in the kitchen and I'm running to the bathroom to vomit and I'm coming back to his computer and I'm taking pictures with my cell phone and I'm running to vomit and I'm crying and I'm a hysterical mess. And I'm thinking, if I leave right now and he figures out that I know these things, I will be the only person that in his world of this facade he has crafted, both as a heterosexual male and as a upstanding member of the community, I'm going to out myself. And because I'm the only person he knows, and because this evil has been going on forever, he's going to kill me. Right. And by then, the physical part of the abuse had progressed, right? He's going to kill me. So I just started taking as many pictures as I could with my cell phone of these things and tried to check and make sure that everything, as near as I could tell, looked the same on his computer as if I hadn't closed down browsers, right? Because the browsers are all popping open.
Yeah.
Went in, and you know, this is over again, vomit, crying in a span of hours before he wakes up. I did have also the sense to delete the search history so it wouldn't pop up that I had looked at all these things, right? So I did two smart things. In hindsight, there's 150 I wish I would have done, but I did two smart things that night that protected me. One, make sure those emails went back and marked them as unread, and then deleted the search history. Mm-hmm. And I went back to bed and acted like nothing was wrong and did that for a couple of days because I could not process what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to do what I suggest people do, is I reached out to the people I loved, reached out to my friends, and reached out to some family members and said, this is what I found. I'm very scared. I don't know what I'm going to do next, but this is what I know so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started piece by piece to create an escape plan. And I kept the notes. They are manic in my phone because I'll write about it someday.
Yeah.
They're manic. I mean, I even had to write, I had to write it on a post-it note and I had to write it on my notes. My name is Carolyn Hammond because I couldn't process anything. I couldn't even at times remember my name. And my girlfriends from across the country got together and hired a moving truck for me. I had a person come over and give me an estimate on packing the house because my plan was to move out when he went to work one day. And interestingly enough, she said to me, so you're going to leave all this? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we had this big, beautiful, you know, almost 5,000 square foot house.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. I said, I didn't you hear me tell you what I found?
Right.
You know, did you hear that? She's like, yeah. Most people wouldn't. Most people wouldn't leave this. They figure out a way to work around that. I said, I discovered there are nights I didn't know happened and then I don't remember.
Right. Right.
On his computer. So, you know, I spent a little bit of time trying to think if I could live that way. And I called my girlfriends on the night before. I said, I'm too scared. I can't do it. And they said, too late. It's already been paid. We're going to be out the money if you don't do it.
Right.
And my friends sprung into action and my kids' friends sprung into action and they were all waiting around the corner. And I had I knew some of the folks he worked with who made sure that they would, tell me if he left work for the day. They didn't know what was happening. They just agreed to, I just made up some excuse like, hey, you know, I'm planning something. If he leaves, would you let me know? It took a village. I had the security guy reprogramming the entire house. I had a locksmith come up and change the keys. My goal at that time was to stay in the house and ask him to leave. At that part of my implementation, it took me 10 days to craft the escape plan, and it took me about 6 to 9 months to implement it.
Wow.
And on the day that he left for work, everybody was waiting and sprung into action, and we moved our stuff out, the majority of it, within one day.
Wow. That's great.
And then, yeah. So it took a village. It took me opening up. And if that's one thing I could say to people, if you choose to tell your story and ask for help, you're not alone in the world. And if someone doesn't respond well to your story, then don't stop talking. Find another person.
Right. You need somebody to validate. Right. And we talk about that a lot in our counseling sessions is validation.
Yeah. Because what if the first person I had talked to was the gal who came to give me the estimate to move? Right. And right. She said, why are you leaving? If she'd been the first person I talked to, I might not have left. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's really important to say, if you choose to say this is happening to me and it's egregious and it's hurting me, and that person doesn't respond with how can I help, but rather says, why are you going? They are not your people. Find your people. Because there's nobody that should say it. Find a way to deal with the fact that he's pimping you out. Find a way to deal with the fact there's nights you don't remember. That's, you know, it's one thing to say craft your safety plan and you can leave. It's another thing to say, why would you leave all of that? What's wrong with you?
I know.
So that's the part that started on my journey. And that was the ugly part. I couldn't find a place to live. I was 6 weeks without a home. Now I had people I could stay with. I house sat a lot. I slept in my car a lot. My car was packed as if it was a home. I changed my clothes in the lobbies of hotel restrooms because they're the cleanest. So it was sure beat changing clothes in a gas station. I would change clothes in my storage unit. Because I didn't have a place to live for 6 weeks. And I was afraid if I didn't move often, or if I stayed with my friends and family, that if he found me and he decided to kill me, he would kill everybody else. And statistically that bears out. And then I finally found a place to settle.
And so you did. And the second part of your piece is changing lives, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tell me about hashtag She Wins too.
Sure. So along this journey, I decided when I escaped, I had to get really small because I didn't know who all was in a secret world, right? I didn't know what friends, because I found some of the people that were in our world were also in his world and hiding this from me. And around my children, that makes me livid, around my children, these people that were participating in all of this. And I didn't know who to trust, so I got really small. And I didn't, because I didn't know the commonality of, I didn't realize I was being abused in all the emotional and financial and verbal and physical ways until I left. This catalyst is what forced me to leave.
Wow. Yeah.
I wanted to figure out a way to help other people. And I started to talk about everything on LinkedIn, on Facebook. I will never name his name. It was the after when I started to write about it and when I started to realize there were a lot of people like me, because I started to talk. One of the people I connected with is Alisa Devine, and we connected on LinkedIn. And I said, I dig what you do. Dig how you do it. Talk to me about your story. And we became friends. And she's an author and publisher. And so when she decided to write her second book, her first book as it relates to domestic violence was called hashtag She Wins. And so she approached me and she said, I've got this idea and I want to make it a movement. I want to make it bigger and bolder. And I want to talk with women who then use their fuel to do something else after with it, in whatever way, shape, and form. Not that everybody doesn't, but it's just a little bit of a different take on the book. And not that the first people didn't, I don't mean that, but just a little bit of a different take on the book. So hashtag She Wins Too. And she asked me to write my story. And she said it can be whatever you want it to be about. And so I'm about 5.5 years away from having escaped. And I decided to write about what I just said, the most egregious, which I think is the sexual and physical abuse issued against me, because that is the hardest thing for survivors to talk about. I mean, they can talk about a lot of it, but if you get into a quiet moment and you peel back enough layers, what is at the bottom of that is the extreme physical and sexual abuse, and that's hardest to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to do it because here's why. And you know, if you look at between Craigslist and adult friend finders, there's 412 million users of those sites, and nobody talks about the partners of those users. So my thought is, if I could just get 5% of 412 million people to feel less alone in the world, of the partners of those people, all thinking of ideas, all thinking of how do we combat this, all because there's so much abuse layered in with all that, then man, I get to start to change the world, and I get to hear all the ideas of the four, you know, the 21 million people who are the partners of this kind of abuse, helping me change it. So Elisa agreed, and there are 9 other incredible women all sharing their stories. There's a beauty in it. There's a first and a second wife of the same abuser.
Wow.
In the book, there's people who have risen up from such abuse and gone on to really try to impact the world around them and themselves and their families. And it's a beautiful thing. And yeah, we #SheWinsToo was number one bestseller on the day of release.
What is a healthy relationship? Mm-hmm. Maybe we rewind the clock and we go back and we say, you know, and not so much, I hear all the time, I'm going to teach my daughters not to put up with this, not to do this. How about we teach our sons?
Exactly.
How about we teach our daughters not to have abusive, not to be abusive?
Right.
How
right.
do we do that? We lead by example.
Yes.
And getting in there and grabbing the bull by the horns and talking about prevention and understanding. So 2 things: we want to stop it from ever starting. Mm-hmm. And we want to have a safe place and a safe zone for people who are now going through it to feel okay about talking about it.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yes. And that's the beauty of it, right? Because you and I are talking and I have a smile on my face, and what doesn't show is the years of random crying in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I could not soak the stench of him off me, no matter how many showers I took. I told my friends to throw away all my clothes because if he had seen me in it or touched me in it, I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. Too much drinking, too many pills to go to sleep, too much overeating. All of these too much at the same time that I was doing therapy and going 2 or 3 times a week. Because the beauty is you don't have to live at a domestic violence shelter in order to take advantage of their services. So I was going to the shelter, and if I could like give a big and bold hearty hooza to domesticshelters.org, they've got the most beautiful zip code level data from across the country. You plug in your zip code, it pops up every service in that zip code. Because when you have to deal with the legalities and you have to deal with the law and the court systems, you need zip code level data.
Even if we do a program called In Her Shoes, right?
Oh, I love it. Yes.
Program.
That's because an incredible program.
Why doesn't she just leave? And I have too been guilty of asking that. Because my situation, where I am now in a healthy relationship, I can never imagine, I can't understand what it would be like to be isolated. And
right.
So it's easy for me to say, why doesn't she just leave? Now, this was me 20 years ago.
Right.
But now, knowing what I'm doing, going through the trauma, being trauma informed and caring, the answer to that question is a loaded bullet. And I have a love-hate relationship with that question because we do a lot of education pieces. And I'll say to them, that somebody will say, well, I don't understand why she doesn't just leave. I hate that question. The better question is, why is he abusing her?
Right.
Or him.
Right.
Gender, like we talked about with gender.
Right.
But it also gives me the platform to answer that question.
Yeah.
And most of the time people are like, wow, I would have never thought about that. That's not
exactly
part of the conversation that I have, because you're not in an abusive relationship. You are not isolated from your friends. You're not isolated from your family. You don't have children. Pets, don't discount pets.
Oh, and you know what? That's statistically, 90% of abusive situations includes abuse of the pet and the threat that if you leave, they will kill the pet.
Right.
Look, I just was in Italy and I went around and visited shelters and domestic violence advocates mm-hmm. in Italy. And the translator is a friend of mine, a new friend though. So she doesn't know my whole story. She just knows I do this as my side gig, and she arranges for all this. And the people asked why I started Safe in Harm's Way. And I said, because I'm a survivor, and they wanted to know what happened. And I started to tell the story, and it's the same look Jennifer got on her face. And it's this mixture of such sadness and such worry. And it's always, really? You? And it's to the point, and they start to cry. Now, if somebody else starts to cry, I mean, I can get a little emotional now. I start to cry. It happens in movies. It happens in life. I cry too. It's getting to the point now where I can navigate that. But the beautiful part of that story of someone beginning to cry when they hear your story is you have found the right person to share your story with.
Right.
Because that level of compassion and empathy and, oh my gosh, is a beautiful gift from the universe. At the same time, it's also the first time someone's hearing it. And that is a tad bit painful. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. The amount of courage and strength is unbelievable to me. But I can see, you know, when you talk about trauma, right? Talking about it is therapeutic.
Yes.
And you navigate the different feelings and you are able to communicate the levels of trauma. And I think that's the step towards healing.
Yes.
But your story, I hope, and like you said, it's the part that no one wants to share. It's the behind the scenes. It's the close your daughter's ears kind of part of the story.
Yep.
And of course, with this podcast, there'll be disclaimers. There'll be trigger warnings. There needs
yes.
to be. But I think it's a real conversation. And I think that it questions. We always need to, mm-hmm. to always question things. I'm thinking of the correct word, but it's inspiring.
Thank you.
Yes. I feel like your story is not even finished.
It's not. It's no. not. I feel that in every part of my body. Mm-hmm. It is meant what happened to me. I sure would trade the pain, but I would not trade the gain. And many of my best mentors throughout my life and my professional career have said your entire professional career has been junior high for what you're going to do next whenever you decide to do that, because it will take everything you've done well in your career, and you'll be able to amplify this message and help people. And fortunately, again, I'm surrounded by fabulous friends. My kids are amazing humans, each also processing their own. You know, they had much to process. They loved this person. He wasn't their father, but they loved this person and processing that. You know, that's a lifetime, but we're all doing it because we're talking about it and we're discussing it and we keep discussing it. And that's the beauty of it. And when you find the right, when you find your tribe, Leslie, there's no reason in the world that you and I should know each other. There is zero reason in the world that on a random evening we are having a conversation about personal and intimate things. There is zero reason for a connection.
Right.
But we've started on a pathway that we can nurture and evolve to and change the world. And there is such immense beauty and power in that, and it's a miracle. It really is. You can either choose, I think it's Einstein that said you can choose to look at everything as a miracle, you know, or not. And that choice is yours and how you handle it. You know, that's the beauty of this. And now we've got each other in our world, right? Mm-hmm. And now we've got the ability to spread the message. And now we have the ability to collaborate on other things. And there is such just gratitude for this moment and you being in it with me, that, you know, I call it good, clean fuel that makes the day rattle and hum.
Carolyn, thank you so much. This was amazing, and I could not have picked a better kickoff for this series. I really couldn't have.
Well, I'm honored, and I'm happy to connect you, and I'm happy of our connection. Thank you for investing your time in me, and thank you for doing the homework and the work that you do at Avalon and how you bring show up in the world. Thank you, and for all of your teammates that work together with you to do it.
We are a tribe. We are definitely a tribe.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Avalon Center's podcast, Responding with Hope, is paid for by the Department of Social Services. Avalon Center offers emergency shelter, individual and group counseling, and much more to survivors of domestic and sexual assault. If you need help, call our 24-hour hotline at 833-537-0970 or visit us at avaloncenter.org.